They are indispensable, of course, for the way people are now governed, or the way they are governing themselves. So the problem is now, is the necessity of those hermeneutics, which is linked to the way we are governed, is this necessity so necessary, as we can do. And I have the feeling that there is a kind of an appui réciproque, mutual support. The governing, the way we are governed, tries to justify itself by a reference to the hermeneutics of the self, human sciences, and so on and so on. And those hermeneutics of the self are referred particularly to a good political functionment of institutions, and so on and so on. What you can see, all that is quite general and abstract and maybe not clear, but when you see, for instance, the way pedagogical institutions function, you see very well how there is the way the pedagogy is institutionalized is justified by psychology, children's psychology, psychoanalysis, and so on, and those are integrated or justified by the fact that if they succeed because they permit a way of governing children to work. Is it clear? No?
No, I see the kind of line of thinking. What I wondered about was the source, and you needed to say something about it, the source of your pessimism about having a notion of there being truths about the self or discoverable truths about the self without having the notion of sacrifice of the self as a necessary adjunct to that notion. Now, you've begun to say something about why you are pessimistic about retaining the one while dropping the other. But it seems to me that that also cuts into or connects with a very fundamental belief, which may be part of the system of governance that you're referring to, that it's by now a natural belief that the way to organize our institutions with respect to pedagogy and testing is on the basis of whatever we can find out about the world and the people in it. That is to say, that we should make our institutions on the basis of what we know or can find out. Now, that's in a way what you are suggesting is the source of the trouble, presumably. That is, if I base my psychological institution on the fact that I think I know about psychology and so on, then that improves those, or pushes all the facts into the institution in a way that seems inevitable if I'm going to base it on that kind of thing.
That's exactly the point.
I think I can paraphrase it. We must base our educational institutions and on something, and presumably we base it on what we can find out about the world and about ourselves. And I think Barry is saying it's thinks that you're questioning that. Are you questioning all attempts to know about human beings, or just a certain psychological way of trying to find out about human beings, which you're calling the hermeneutics of the self? I think that's part of the question.
Yes, I am trying to question the fact that we are obliged, or we think that we are obliged to constitute a scientific knowledge about children to justify the way we are governing them. It's this fact that I'm questioning, not the content of the knowledge.
But are you saying there's nothing we can find out about children that would be relevant to governing them, or is it just the way the human sciences are trying to find out about children?
I think that in any case, what we find about children's psychology is necessarily relevant for the way we want to govern them, because we need to know things about children's psychology because we want to govern them. And there is a constitutive relation between the will to govern and the will to know. And those relations, which are, of course, what I say is very schematic, but all those relations, which are very complicated, constitute a nexus of governing techniques and knowledge procedures.
And what status would a type of knowledge such as Piaget have?
Excuse me?
And what status would a type of knowledge such as Piaget have? I know it's a very complicated, it's a complicated question, but it's right at the intersection of this sort of a problem, because this is obviously a scientific theory of states of cognitive development, or at least that's its claim. Yeah. But yet you're saying that it's also a scientific knowledge of the discipline of children, or that at least would be one implication. Now the question is, even though it's used as a scientific knowledge, and discipline children, is it also, in some sense, possibly an adequate form of, A, is it possibly a description of how children develop? And B, are you saying that the very necessity for trying to discover such descriptions of child development may be linked inextricably to a form of discipline?
The question you ask concerns the my opinion about the objectivity of this kind of knowledge. But I think that the fact that the knowledge is in its existence, is in its historical origin, and in its social and cultural existence, linked deeply, constitutively linked to technique of government, does not exclude a priori the fact that this knowledge is objective. And I don't know why it should be exclusive. It should be exclusive if you admit that since there is a relation of knowledge, since there is a knowledge relation, then disappear and must disappear all other kinds of relations. If you admit that knowledge relation cannot exist without being absolutely pure, that, of course, is, I think, the thesis of all kind of philosophy of knowledge. But I think that we have to question this kind of this philosophy of knowledge. And why should knowledge? Well, the knowledge couldn't be objective, since it is historically linked to power relations, to governing techniques, and so on and so on. Really, I don't see the reason. I see the reason in a kind, in a type of philosophy, philosophy of historian, and philosophy of knowledge.
Yeah? Would you see Piaget's work as a kind of hermeneutic of the self? Or is there something else that you mean?
Yes, I should say that, yes. If we give a large historical extension to the word hermeneutics of the self, of course, yes.
Is there anyone else's work that you think is more a better example?
No, but you see, when I speak of hermeneutics of the self, I don't have in mind a bad form of human sciences, which could be opposed to a good form. I say that the historical ground for all those human sciences has been the project of hermeneutics of the self, which, for instance, why in the Greek philosophy, that when people were so preoccupied with the règles de vie, the rules of life, the way of living, philosophers during centuries and centuries have taught to people how to behave. And they never had in mind the idea that they need something like human science or the science of. That began with, I think, Christianity, when, with Christianity, not only the book, but also the self became an object of interpretation.
Yeah. What do you think is happening to the technologies of the self in modern literature? I'm thinking about disruption of the narrative discourse and so on, and the subject as being more and more disintegrated. What do you think is happening? Do you think it's the reflection of this attempt to get rid of hermeneutic of the self
Well, that is a very good, important, and difficult question. I think we could say first that modern literature began, I think, when hermeneutics of the self gave places to a kind of écriture, of writing, which, for instance, begin with Montaigne. The doom of epics, of epics and dramatics, and the beginning of a kind of literature like Montaigne and so on and so on, is the moment, the cross point where the hermeneutics of the self, which have been till this moment a purely religious practice, was open to everybody. And that was the result, not at all of the doom of the religious experience, but the result of the extension of religious experience. Luther and Counter-Reformation are at the roots of modern literature, since modern literature is nothing else but the development of self-hermeneutics. We are in, yes.
I guess I had a different definition of modern literature. I had a much more restrictive contemporary, if you want, or this, I was looking at the structure of the narrative.
Yeah, and there is also a problem in literature, I think, that modern literature. I think that there is something which is related to one of the most important features of the hermeneutics of the self. It is the relation between this hermeneutics and the sacrifice of the self. Since literature is in a way a sacrifice of the self, or is both sacrifice of the self and the transposition of the self in other order of things, and other time, another light, and so on. So the modern writer is, in a sense, related and linked and similar to the first Christian ascet, or to the first Christian martyr. When I say that, it is, of course, with the point d'ironie. But I think the same problem of the relations between hermeneutics of the self and the disappearing sacrifice, the negation of the self, is in the nucleus of the literary experience in modern world. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I have traced the hermeneutics of the self back to Plato instead of to Christianity.
Excuse me, the
why don't you trace the beginning of the hermeneutics of the self back to Plato?
I think that in Plato it's not possible to find any hermeneutics of the self. You have a theory of the soul, but no hermeneutics of the self. Never in Plato. You can find something like the self-examination, the examination of the thread of thoughts, or and so on and so on. The problem of Plato is the elevation of soul towards truth. It's not to find the truth in the depth of the soul. And the gnosis eutom, for example, I would say in a very schematic way that in my following this analysis, gnosis eutom has nothing to do with self-hermeneutics. And the philosophical traditional history of the consciousness from gnosis eutom to Descartes is, I think, a contrasens. And it doesn't take into account the specific innovation which appears with Christianism, with Christian spirituality. And Christian spirituality is not the same as Christianity. Christianity begins with a Christ. Christian spirituality begins with Pacôme, Antoine, Jérôme, Athanase, Augustin. That means the 4th and 5th century.
But it's not Plato, then, why not Heraclitus? Because Heraclitus doesn't have this ontology of the soul, but what he does say in one of his fragments is, I searched myself out. I mean, isn't that exactly the hermeneutic of yourself? In other words, my question is, why is the strand of Christianity so important, while the strand of investigation and self-examination, that in a certain way is already there in the Greek tradition, so relatively unimportant in
history? Well, I think that in the Greek tradition, the problem of the self as a being is really important, but not the problem of the self as an object. Well, the techniques which permit to consider oneself as an object of knowledge is not the same thing as the importance of knowing, or show the self as a being. For instance, what strikes me in the first Christian penance rites is this exhomologesis, where the problem is not at all for the sinner neither to know what was really his sin, or the roots of his sins. The problem, nor to explain to other people what was those sins. The problem is only to show his being as a sinner. And I think that a Greek tradition. For instance, in the Greek societies, how do you say, the suppliant? The supplicant shows his being of supplicant. He has been exiled, he has, Oedipus, at the end of the tragedy, comes, he opens the doors of the palace are opened, and everybody shows can see Oedipus comes in front of the palace and shows himself as the killer of his father, as the husband of his mother. So, and that's a kind of exomologesis, if you want. But there is nothing like the constitution of oneself as an object. And I think that neither in Plato nor in Heraclitus you can find something like the constitution of oneself as an object. But that does not mean that the problem of the being of the self is not important. Is it, I'm not sure it's clear, but maybe you can see the direction of the... Excuse me.
I'm kind of methodological. It seems like a lot of your earlier work emphasized very much historical discontinuity, and that even to a certain extent in sexuality books, when you talk about a certain break at what you call the usual time around the age of reason. So now you seem to see a very large scale continuity from the time of your people was taken, you talk. I'm wondering, is this because you had a different idea about the continuity of this continuity of historical practices, or is it because you're dealing with a different kind of
subject matter? Because?
Or because you're dealing with a different kind of subject matter?
Maybe for a third reason. You see, I think that one of the major philosophical questions of in Western philosophy since the beginning of the 19th century is what is Aufklärung? This problem of what happened from the 16th century to the 18th century, and which is the constitution of a type of rationality, of a type of knowledge, or relationship between society and rationality, and so on, all that was, I think, the great one of the great philosophical problems. I think, really, that there are two ways of being a philosopher since the 19th century. It is either to ask the old question, what is truth, or to ask the newer question, what is Aufklärung? And between those two questions, there is not only differences, there is also deep relationships. Because maybe it's not possible to ask the question, what is truth, without asking the question, what is this kind of rationality we use now to answer the question? And of course, the question, what is Aufklärung, cannot be answered without answering the question, what is this truth and the historicity of this truth, which was such that something like Aufklärung was possible. And well, somebody after my first or second lecture asked me, I don't know if it was in a suspicious way, but it doesn't matter, are you a philosopher? But I don't know, and maybe I'm not a philosopher. Anyway, I think the question with which I deal and was a philosophical question. It was, what is Aufklärung? What is Aufklärung? But this question, I have tried to analyze it through a very concrete historical problem, and that's the reason why always I have studied this period from the 16th to the beginning of the 19th century. All those books were a way to try to answer this question. And then I have been obliged, at least for this thing about sexuality, to jump en arrière, excuse me, backwards. Maybe also we can say that there are two great philosophical moments, the pre-Socratic moment and the Aufklärung. And it would be very interesting to compare the way the Heideggerians have interrogated the pre-Socratic moment and the way the Weberians have analyzed the Aufklärung moment. And now, I am wondering if there is not a very interesting moment which would be intermediate between the two others. It would be the patristic moment, the 4th, 5th century, where you appear something which is not in the pre-Socratic moment, and which was already constituted when Aufklärung began. And this moment, and this thing, is the constitution of what I call the hermeneutic of the self, the beginning of the Occidental, the Western self, which is something else than the disappearing of being, and something else than the beginning of the modern rationality. Is it clear?
I want to ask you if you could spell out more specifically the relation between the Catholic things that you brought up at Stanford. Between the lectures at Stanford last year about the Catholic thing and the rise of the modern state and the technology.
And you...
If there is religion.
Yes, you attended those lectures. No, if I ask you a question, it's only to adjust my answer. Well, I thought that the relationship was really clear, since in the Stanford lectures I have tried to analyze what we could call a government, and this very specific type of government, which is the government of individuals, and not only of groups like cities, states, and so on, and why in our and how in our societies we have both the government of huge masses of people through states and a government of individuals in their most specific individuality. That is right. And the other aspect of that is the problem of the technologies of the self, which are, I think, the condition for those this pastoral government. It is a condition for this pastoral government to exist and to work. Without technologies of the self, the pastoral government cannot work. And conversely, those technologies of the self has been supported, as you know very well, by the pastoral type of government you find in the church, of course, and also in other institutions like pedagogy, political institutions, and so on. That's,
so it's related to what you were talking about at the beginning of this discussion, to the failure of this dream to be able to, the juridical dream to govern everybody by a constitution.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah?
Would you distinguish between power and domination?
Ah, yeah.
Okay, you would.
Well, I thought that I explained that, but I tried to explain that, the fact that government, it is a technique of domination, well, of techniques inside of the power relations, such. And this technique, government is not a pure domination relation in that sense. That is not only the way to impose one's will to other people. Government is a technique which permits to use the self people and the self-conduct of people for the domination purpose. You understand?
Yeah, but I didn't ask about government. I asked about the difference between power and domination. And the reason for asking that question is because in Discipline and Punish, and also in the history of sexuality, you don't seem to make a clear demarcation between modifications of power relationships which are regressive or more leading towards domination, and modifications which are subversive or more leading to emancipation, or, to put it in terms which are more historical, the difference between fascism and socialism, whatever you think about socialism.
Well, I would say that for me, the category of power is the larger, and in this category, you can find domination relations, which are the most simple, the more violent, the most violent power relations, and you find also governing techniques, which are way to techniques which permit power to exercise power, but without using violence and so on. Understand? So I would say that domination is only a way to exercise power, and not the best, and not the more secure. Governing is much more efficient. The domination is only, I could say, a crisis power relation, when you can do nothing else than dominate. But as soon as you can, if you have the possibility, the technique, and so on, you govern, and you can obtain.
you also have a sense of government which is basically not useful for human beings. I mean, you talk about technologies of the self as being necessary because of the way we are governed. Mm-hmm. So government has for you a pejorative or a negative connotation, no?
Well, I try not to use too much pejorative description. I don't want to give a laudative meaning to technologies of the self and a pejorative one to the technologies of domination. Technologies of the self are in my analysis, at least, they are not better or worse. Yeah?
Yes,
a pejorative one to the technologies of domination. Technologies of the self are in my analysis, at least, they are not better or worse. Yeah?
Sir, thank you for the question. I've been confused about, in the course of today's discussion, which is the way everyone is using self. Because previously, as I've always understood your work, I mean, self seemed to me roughly similar to the way you use soul in the prison book, in the way self is the prison of the body. Is the prison of the body. And I wonder if you might deal somewhat with exactly what you mean by self, as opposed to a new economy of bodies and pleasures, which it seems to me would eliminate self, at least in that way.
That's an important and
difficult question.
Well, as you say, and as you know, we don't have the word self in French. And unfortunately, because I think it's a good word, really. In French, we have two words, subject and subjectivity. And I don't know if you use very often subjectivity. I don't think so. No. Well, you see, by self, I had in mind the kind of relation that the human being as a subject can have and entertain with himself. For instance, a human being can be in the city a political subject. Political subject means he can vote or he can be exploited by others and so on. The self would be the kind of relation that this human being as subject in a political relation has to himself. No? Is it? That we could call in French subjectivité, but that's not good. I think that self is better. And this kind of relation of the subject to himself, I think it is the target, the cible of techniques. And of course, when I said that the soul was the prison of body, it was it's a joke, of course, but it was that the idea was that the body in this type of discipline is defined and delimited and by a kind of relationship of the individual to himself. It is this type which is imposed by discipline and which gives a certain place and a certain definition to the body, a certain importance to the body, a certain value to the body, and so on. Is it clear? No? My English is really weak when the questions are difficult.
Are there any other jokes in your work that you
know about? Well, I am sure you guessed them.
So?
You sort of motivate the whole project by what you call the failure to find foundation for the hermeneutic of the self. Sometimes I think I understand what you say, but more often I have a feeling that I'm completely at sea and I don't understand at all. What you just said about the self.
self being something where you want to lose the relationship of oneself to oneself. I think logician would call the relation of identity. But I think you have something deeper in mind here. Now, let me try to put my question two ways. I mean, first, you know, what reasons are there for saying that we have failed to find foundations here? I mean, there are many projects that we will not abandon, and about which we could, in a honest way, say we have failed to find foundations, and we have reasons to think that we'll never have foundations, mathematics being one area, for instance. And sometimes you sound as if when you talk about failure to find foundations here, it's as if it's failure to find justification for certain knowledge claims. And sometimes you seem to have something else in mind. That is, that we have no ground for thinking that we have, so to say, possibility of obtaining a certain kind of knowledge about oneself. And that covers a lot. I mean, certainly some of these claims are hopeless, and some of them may not be so hopeless. And I wonder whether, you know, whether I've said enough to sort of indicate the nature of my confusion, both about the notion here of failure and the notion of foundation here, which justifies this whole enterprise of what looks as a sort of retracing our steps.
Yeah. Well, just a remark, you know, the relation of oneself to oneself is not, I think, a relation of identity. The question about foundations and failure. Thousands and thousands of years, a lot of techniques about human conduct have been built. It could be mnemotechnics, for instance. It could be also, and Gates, for instance, has studied, it can be pedagogical techniques. It can be also self-examination and confession, and so on. During centuries, I think that those techniques have been developed by people who were not concerned with the problem of science or of a philosophy of man, of human being, which should have been the both the foundation and the justification, the theoretical justification of those techniques, and who would be able to give the rational roots and the rational norm of those techniques. And I think that since the 16th or the 17th century, it's not possible anymore to develop those techniques without looking for the theoretical foundation of those kind of techniques. And we can consider human sciences as this effort. And when I ask you this question, do you think really that psychology, that anthropology, that psychiatry, and so on, are able first to meet the scientific requisites that have been attained in other sciences? And then, do you think that we have founded a science of man, of human being, which could be the general foundation of all those human techniques?
Suppose one said that, you know, you're stopping prematurely, that is, for a long time we didn't have biology as foundation for medicine, and one might at some point, in fact when biology was in very, very bad shape compared to physics, have said, look, let's forget about medicine, because we're not getting for medicine the kind kind of physics that we're heading for engineering. I think, you know, one might have said that too soon. We still don't have enough biology to justify most of, or much of what we do in medicine, some of which works, some of which does not work. I suppose somebody said, look, we've got all that this shows is that there's much more work ahead. And in fact, there are completely new approaches, perhaps not completely, but, you know, new approaches, new types of theories about in psychology, now development of so-called cognitive sciences, and so on. Now, do you think that that's not a good reply? And, you know, that we must persevere, that in this case we are in a situation which is different from the relationship between physics and engineering or medicine and biology?
Well, I think that's a very good example, and with the relations between biology and medicine, you see very well that it is not in the terms of the medical problem that the foundation of medical techniques have been found in biology, and I would say the same. The way the problems of human being has been formulated through those this hermeneutics of the self since centuries is not able to give foundations to such kind of techniques, but maybe we can find for those techniques a scientific foundation in biology, in engineering, and so on. But in other terms, that those of these hermeneutics of the self. Or, in other words, the fundamental hypothesis of the hermeneutics of the self. That is, that we have to find in ourselves a deep truth which is hidden and which has to be deciphered as a book, an obscure book, a prophetic book, a divine book has to be deciphered. I think that is to get rid of. And maybe we can one day, for instance, find a way to develop pedagogical techniques from, I don't know, from biology, from informatics, and so on and so on. Of course. But not in the terms historically formulated by the hermeneutics of the self. It's not at all a criticism against techniques or science and so on.
Can I? Well, I want to check one thing that comes from that. Just did I misunderstand you or were you saying something else when you said about Piaget a while back? Well, that could be objective science. The fact that it can be used to govern children pedagogically doesn't show that it might not be objective. I thought you were really saying that it, in fact, might very well be objective. But now it seems to me you're saying, well, it is not going to be objective because it's part of the human science approach. And I mean, so were you saying that as part of the Piaget might be a contribution to objective science of the self, or weren't you? I seem to be that a kind of contradiction there.
No, I don't think there is a contradiction. I should say that Piaget may be objective, since what Piaget wants to do, or at least what we can say that he has done, is to give an objective description of what is the evolution of children in our society, such as, and so on and so on. And that is objective. Is Piaget on the way to give us the part or the totality of the science of human being? Well, then I can say no.
I'd be, insofar as we've been objectified in a certain way, that he has the objective.
No, no. Since there is a set of practices of historical, social, and so on data, which defines a domain of possible objectivity, of possible objects. Mm-hmm. Then Piaget, relating to these objects, is perfectly able to give an objective description. Mm-hmm. But the problem is do we have with that a piece, a part, or an element of the science of human being? Is that clear?
It's very clear, yeah, I see.
Louder, please.
He said that power was a relationship between people,
yeah,
and that may or may not be individual. Evidently, power takes on many forms for you. And what I was wondering is that among all these forms, is it possible that there are relationships between people and things which aren't people, which exert the exact same effects as relations between people? And examples that may be institutions, or they may be things like ideas, or they might be physical.
Institutions, or the second thing you said?
Ideas. Or maybe physical objects have this relation. And these might be types of relationships over which we have much less control and much less ability to transform.
Well, you see, I think that we have to distinguish. I won't speak about physical objects. I think the problem is quite different. But take, for instance, ideas. When you say that ideas exercise power, I think that it is only in a metaphorical way. You can say that ideas are influential, but what does that mean? That is that when somebody uses those ideas or expresses those ideas, then he can, because those ideas are accepted by the people or are common to a set of people, then he can use those ideas for a certain purpose, and that then exists a power relation. But it is only when people exercise those power relations that you can speak of power. I think ideas have no power by themselves. Institutions have no powers by themselves. They have power in that extent that they are ruled by people. But I think it's obvious, no?
Do you think that then it might be possible that ideas and institutions enter into the relationship of power between people in ways which are, not perhaps in principle, but in some way not accessible to us? It's just not a matter of what an individual making use of an idea or an institution in such a way to exert power, but that idea and institution entering into that relationship is something outside our control or our freedom or something like that.
Well, in it, they gain a certain momentum of their own?
Well, in a sense, you know.
Rivalry.
What about ideas and language?
Why this idea, after when you're talking about Christianity, the role of confession, the idea,
this is the last question. Go ahead.
Okay, the idea of salvation as a mode of force, that seems to have some sort of life of its own. In that it seemed to motivate all this confessional activity. I mean, there had to be some kind of ideal in which this sacrifice of the self was a service to.
Yes. It's difficult to. Don't you feel that it's really self-evident that an idea has no power by itself?
Right. Yes.
It can be accepted. It can. It is easy to understand. It is seducing. It has. You can have psychological profit if you accept this idea, and so on and so on. You can say that. But that the idea exercise of power? No. Well, you see, this word is a terrific word, power. And of course, I have been one of the numerous victims of the words of the word power. But if we want to analyze this field, the specific field of the interactions of individuals, which are such that somebody can act over somebody else in a certain purpose and so on and so on. If you want to isolate this field, of course this field is linked to the other, but if you want to analyze it, you are obliged to isolate it as a problem. Then you have to give to the word power a relatively restrictive definition, and you are obliged to get rid of all the metaphoric uses of this word. And I think that the idea that the theme that the ideas have a power by themselves, I think you have to say that it is only a metaphorical use.
It's 6 o'clock, and it's very hard to talk for 2 hours in a foreign language, and I'm sure you're tired, and we thank you very much.